I think Meloni was hoping that the European Court of Justice verdict would go in her favour and it would unblock the whole situation. And that isn't the case.
Follow the money.
This is the podcast of the European Investigative Newsroom, Follow the Money. I'm your host, Emma de Chatigny, recording from Strasbourg this week. And as usual, I'm joined by Follow the Money reporter and my co-host, Alexander Fanta, in Vienna. Hi, Alex.
Hello, good morning.
In this episode, we're taking a closer look at migrant centers that Italy created in Albania. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni wanted them to be a flagship project. She wanted to send asylum seekers to the centers in Albania to bring down the numbers of migrants in her own country. But just a few years after Meloni came up with the plans, the hubs are plagued with problems. Ballooning construction costs, legal disputes, and facilities that stand largely empty. And yet, European leaders continue to look at them as an inspiration. Alex, migration is a topic we haven't really been discussing here yet. Is it something you've ever reported on?
Well, I was a reporter for the Austrian press agency 10 years ago when there was this big movement of refugees from Syria and later also from Afghanistan to Europe. That was is known today as the refugee crisis. Hundreds of thousands of people coming to Europe and being rescued from very precarious situations they were facing. I'm glad to have reported on that. It was a big story in 2015.
And still a big story today. And to dive deeper into that, we're joined by James Imam, an investigative journalist based in Milan, and he uncovered how Meloni's dreams turn into a taxpayer-funded fiasco. Welcome, James.
Hello, thank you for having me.
To start with, to give our listeners a clear picture, could you tell us a little bit about what your investigation revealed about Italy's offshore migrant hubs?
So Meloni, as one of her flagship policies, has homed up a couple of migrant centres in Albania. The idea is that migrants, they are intercepted by the Italian Coast Guard before they reach Italian waters, and they're redirected to these two camps in Albania. That is where their asylum requests are processed. We did this investigation in two parts. In the first part, we wanted to see the toll, the human toll of these centers on the people sent there. And we were able to, by intercepting leaked documents passed on to us by lawyers, we were able to follow four Bangladeshis who went through the system quite closely. We were able to see the absolute turmoil and stress of being picked up in international waters, kept on a military boat for a number of days, and then without their knowledge, sent to Albania, where it's debatable whether or not their human rights were respected. The second part we published would Follow the Money. We wanted to discover how much it cost to build these things. And so the public had been told that the construction of these centres cost nearly 40 million euros. We discovered that they cost almost 75 million euros. And in order to plug that gap, public funds were pinched from all sorts of other pots, from taxpayers' funds. Italians, essentially, we believe, are paying through the nose for a couple of prisons in a foreign country that are leading to great suffering.
And your investigation primarily focuses on Italy and Albania, but of course it is in a way a wider European story, and also other European countries are taking inspiration from Meloni right now. But to fully grasp the context of your story, I think it is good for us to first go back to Italy, specifically 2022, the year when Giorgia Meloni was elected. And what exactly was she trying to do in that election?
This was a time where so-called sbarchi, as they call them, Italian arrivals to Italy's shores were really skyrocketing. So numbers of migrant arrivals to Italy's shores were ballooning. We went from about 35,000 arrivals in 2020 to 67,000 arrivals the following year, and almost 105,000 arrivals by 2022. So there was a lot of fear about what was happening to Italy and its ability to manage these migrants at the time. And Meloni really capitalized on that, promising to come down hard on migration.
You're from the UK, but you moved to Italy in 2013. So when Meloni was running her campaign in 2022, you already knew Italian politics quite well. Would you say migration was really the one thing that Meloni ran her campaign on?
Yeah, Meloni was very much small fry before 2022. She was an absolute outlier, and the way that she was absolutely able to steamroll all political opponents and have the biggest majority that any government has had in my decade in Italy was surprising to many. Migration was a huge part of it, along with sort of traditional families. That was another electoral promise, and she's followed up on that by making life quite difficult for homosexual couples, for example, wanting to adopt children. That's another story. But I would say that the two prongs of her campaign were migration, traditional families, and also promising to protect Italian workers.
Her flagship solution to this migration issue was the idea of offshore migrant hubs. And what exactly was her plan, and how is it supposed to work?
Italy has come up with this scheme whereby migrants redirected to these two camps in Albania. I mean, we're speaking about maybe one significant camp. The first is sort of a holding center in the port city of Shenzhen, where they're sort of screened for diseases and they're sort of identified. And then they're passed on to this enormous processing center a few kilometers inland in Jadr. And the idea is that there, and this is the innovative thing, that is where their asylum requests are processed. Let's remember that these two centres are in Italian jurisdiction. So Italian law applies.
How is that possible that we have Italian jurisdiction in another country?
So that's part of the deal between Meloni and Edi Rama, her socialist counterpart in Albania. And basically Albania has ceded these two bits of land to Italy. You have courtrooms there which have video links. You have judges in Italy who are able to assess each asylum request in theory. And because we're dealing with areas at the border, thanks to EU law, Italy can apply the accelerated procedure. So she promised that 36,000 migrants would be processed through these centres. The idea is that their asylum requests would be promptly rejected and they'd be deported from these centres straight back to their home countries without setting foot in any EU state's territory.
I think it's important also to look at the historical context. I mean, links between Albania and Italy.
Yeah. Yeah,
in the course of World War II, fascist Italy invaded Albania, and there's a lot of dark history there. So for, again, to have a kind of Italian, you know, kind of detention centers on Albanian soil is something that kind of deeply resonates within the problematic history of these two countries.
Absolutely. And I think it's also the fact that this is happening in the first place, an expression of the very weird relationship that Meloni has with Edi Rama. So as we said before, Meloni, from the post-fascist wing of Italian politics, very much on the hard right now, and Edi Rama, a so-called socialist. And these two are apparently best friends. I mean, whenever they meet, you know, Rama is now accustomed to kneeling down and taking Meloni's hand, receiving on a red carpet, and basically showering her with praise. And Albania and Italy have, despite the fact that they have the historical tensions and problems that Alex touched on, they're also very close. I mean, there are linguistic links between the two. There are towns in south of Italy where basically the local dialect is Albanian. Lots of Albanians speak Italian. Italy has a history of hosting Albanian migrants, and the two countries sort of feel quite close to each other.
It's quite clear what Italy stood to gain from it, but what you're telling me also makes me wonder, what were the gains for Albania? Was it purely financial?
So Edi Rama has stressed over and over again that Albania takes absolutely nothing from this project. So on the face of things, you might say, well, what does he have to gain from this? Surely it's the political capital from collaborating with Meloni and being his best friend. It was quite interesting when quite recently Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, made a trip to Albania and reportedly was exploring the possibility of opening similar centres in the country, and Rama basically refused and said, no, we're only dealing with Italy. So there is apparently absolute loyalty there to aiding Italy and almost doing Meloni a favour. But I think another important thing here is that, of course, let's not forget that Albania, it has aspirations of joining the European Union. And it's going through the process now of having its application looked at. But I think also Rama is trying now to lean on Meloni, really turn her into a key ally, because that could be key to perhaps easing and helping along Albania's application to join the European Union.
Yeah.
This was quite present in the news, this whole innovative plan. And in that sense, of course, it was controversial from the start. But at what point did you have this feeling of like, okay, there are concrete fishy things going on here. I should look into this project more.
Yeah, I think as soon as this protocol was announced and there was a huge amount of media attention, because of course nothing this ambitious, I would argue, has ever been done before, at least in Europe. And of course the European Union was very publicly warming to the idea of sending migrants to third countries. Yeah. There was a huge amount of interest in this for starters. So we were already sort of sniffing around and trying to see what we could work out about this. I think the first step was getting the official budget for this project, which was leaked to us from an opposition MP with the left-wing Democratic Party. We were able to break down what was in this draft law and look at how the money was going to be distributed. And adding up all of the sums, we came to the budget figure, which was 653 million. But there were all sorts of anomalies and things that hadn't been taken into account.
Right. So being able to have a look into that budget was your starting point. And then how did you go about investigating it?
We decided that this really warranted a closer look. So myself and Vladimir, an Albanian journalist for the Balkan Investigative Reporting Network, we followed four Bangladeshi migrants taken to Albania, mainly through documents that were leaked to us by their lawyer. And then we wanted to get onto the question of the finances. We thought that the best way of working out how money had been spent and potentially overspent was to focus on construction. So our first step was to consult an anti-corruption transparency database in Italy. So we were able to see essentially the estimated cost for each aspect of construction. We were able to track down a document for each of those tenders, indicating which company won the tender. It looked like nobody else had found these documents, but they were there hidden away somewhere on the Defense Ministry's website. And then we basically needed to work out how much Italy effectively spent on each tender. The Defense Ministry, to our great surprise, provided what we were asking for, which was a list of how much had been awarded to each of the winners. So we were able to add all of those up and we got to our figure for the construction of the centers.
Once you checked all those numbers, what did you find?
So we found that costs had almost doubled, as we said. Italian media had repeated basically verbatim the Italian government's claims that these centers had cost almost 40 million euros. We discovered that it was much more than that. And as we were able to analyze exactly who won these contracts. Some Albanian companies really, really have benefited from this. So all of the investment for this project is coming from Italy. We're speaking about huge sums of money. It's mainly the money is being managed by the Interior Ministry and the money is being diverted elsewhere. For example, it was the Defense Ministry that was tasked with building these centers. But when it comes to hiring private companies to do things like construct the centers, private companies in Albania have been able to benefit from that. And we discovered that about half of the funds for the construction of these centers. So we said that we're talking about nearly 75 million euros of money. About half of those went to an Albanian construction company called Everest. And we discovered that from this single construction project, Everest earned more than it had done from public contracts in the previous 5 years. Wow. So we're speaking about a huge amount of money here for that particular company.
As you've said, the centers became crazily expensive, but that's not the only issue. They've also been getting a lot of legal problems. And what kind of issues did they face?
Yes, I suppose there are two immediate legal problems. One is that a growing number of citizens, political parties, NGOs have basically been filing requests to the financial courts in Italy to investigate the government. Because if the Italian government is irresponsibly managing or we could say, mismanaging public funds. That is arguably unconstitutional. So as more and more information has surfaced about the true cost of, or what the true cost might be of this project, there have been, we've counted at least half a dozen requests to the financial courts to dig a bit deeper to see how Italy's been spending money. I suppose the other big legal challenge has been from the Italian courts themselves, who have been required to validate the migrants that were sent to the centres for their asylum processing. For this to work, this whole scheme to work, the migrants need to hail from safe countries.
Because that's where they'd be sent back to.
Exactly, that's where they'd be sent back to. And it, on each of those occasions, the Italian courts contested the fact that they were all from safe countries, basically. So they were sent to Albania, and they had to be brought back to Italy. And the European Court of Justice essentially said that the Italian courts had been right in its application of the safe country idea, meaning that the system is blocked. I think Meloni was hoping that the European Court of Justice verdict would go in her favour and it would unblock the whole situation. And that isn't the case.
And do all these problems mean that the beds now remain empty?
So the system, as it was originally conceived, is essentially blocked. Because Meloni's not able to use the centres as she planned, she's basically sending migrants to Albania who already have return orders, deportation orders. They applied for asylum in Italy. Months or years later, their asylum requests were rejected. They're told to go home and they're held in these deportation centres before they go home. Italy has 10 of those on national territory already, and they now have Italy basically has an 11th in Albania.
This idea of Italy having a jurisdiction in those specific places in Albania, does that still stand?
Yes. Yeah, okay. That still stands. Yeah, which is precisely why Italy is able to use these centres as a deportation centre.
But so to recap, instead of using these centres to detain people who are still waiting for their asylum claim to be processed, they now use it exclusively for a much smaller group of people whose asylum claims have already been rejected and who end up likely to be sent back.
Exactly.
Which means the whole political point is not actually, it's not actually being served.
Yeah. The model has basically failed. The plan has basically failed. When the European Court of Justice's verdict was issued, the media response was basically that this is a severe blow to Meloni's ambitions to set up this system, which never really got going in earnest. I mean, as we said, she was hoping to process 36,000 migrants through these centres.
I think that's very interesting because in a way, of course, we can very clearly label this as a fail. But I think it's also very important to mention at this point that inside Brussels, many people actually looked at Meloni's idea as very innovative thinking. Commission President Ursula von der Leyen praised the centers as out-of-the-box thinking. And in a way, in Brussels and other EU member states are still looking at Italy to copy the idea of these centers, right?
Yeah, I think the EU was looking very closely at Italy to see what it could learn. And as you say, Ursula von der Leyen was encouraging states to take, learn lessons from Italy, basically, see how they could apply a similar model. And of course, other European Union states have said, "Oh, we'd like to do something similar." And the European Union has now gone on the record and has officially said it is hoping to make it legal and allow EU member states to legally set up return hubs in third countries. So the EU seems to be going in that direction. The return hubs are slightly different to what Meloni had in mind because it's not about processing asylum seekers' requests offshore, but it's about sending failed asylum seekers to these hubs and holding them there until they're sent home. So a little bit like what Italy is now using those centres for, exactly.
I think it's important to understand how much this whole idea of, kind of offshoring migrants was a talking point of the far right for over a decade now, around the time of the big refugee crisis of 2015. This was considered very much a fringe idea from far right political figures who were still very far from power at the time. And now Meloni, as the bellwether of the European far right, has essentially transformed this into a mainstream idea, something that's now being seriously considered by European Commission, increasingly influenced by some of these far right ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think you're absolutely right to say that this has been really brought to the mainstream, this whole idea. I mean, I remember it was 2016 when the Austrian, then I think he was the foreign minister, Sebastian Kurz, called for the adoption of the Australian model, because of course Australia had previously experimented with sending migrants to offshore camps on islands in the Australian territory. And that really seemed completely like a fringe idea that now everybody is speaking about. And it's quite striking. It remains striking to hear Ursula von der Leyen actively encouraging member states to explore these options.
I think it's also noteworthy because the Australian example was plagued by very gross human rights violations. And I think it is very hard to disassociate, at least from any example known so far, this model of kind of detaining people who have a legitimate claim or not, but they're still detaining the people and then, you know, kind of curtailing their freedom very often. But the way the centers operate in Australia led to people complaining about insufficient housing, insufficient access to medical facilities. There were a lot of people killing themselves, essentially, in these centers. So saying that is a success is very questionable from a humanitarian point of view.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because, you know, now that these centers are still sort of in Italy, they're still partially functioning. So as we now know, they're no longer being used to process migrant asylum requests. However, migrants are still being sent there as they await deportation. And you spoke about people in the Australian camps, some of these migrants committing suicide because of the things they'd experienced there. Well, in Italy, in May, a migrant who had been sent to the Albanian centres, a guy called Hamid Badoui, who was a 42-year-old Moroccan, he committed suicide shortly after being brought back to Italy after a period sent within the Albanian, by this point already deportation camps. His lawyer basically said that a few days before he committed suicide in an Italian deportation camp, that prison is better than a deportation camp, and I will never return to Albania, were some of his last words, and tragically committed suicide a few days later. This was back in May. And so I think the human rights record within the Italian camps in Albania is really coming under scrutiny now as well. And Italy will have to face up to those charges at some point as well.
In this act of pushing people to an outside detention center in a third country with laxer standards of rule of law, then you end up with, a blueprint for human rights abuses. And I think this whole idea is very hard to reconcile with, you know, democratic standards of, you know, rule of law standards that are, upheld in a democratic country. So in some ways, the Italian example is the make or break point for the entire European Union. Is it possible to set this up in a way that is both legal and financially sound and also maybe politically viable?
That's it for today's episode. Thank you so much for this very interesting conversation, James. And Alex and I will be back soon for another episode. You can find James's story in the show notes and on the website ftn.eu, of course.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been brilliant to look again at this investigation.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.